Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Hello, everybody. Gino here, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. And to my right today, Mr. Stenziano's not here. I'm missing my Yaki Boom Boom. I got my boy, Mr. Joshua Rusin. Josh, how you doing, bro?
Doing well, Gino. Very excited today. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. We've got a really cool podcast today. I've got a guest. His name is Bob LaChance, a nationally recognized speaker, mentor, and trainer who specializes in helping companies build their businesses through automation and outsourcing. Bob is the owner of REVA Global LLC, which focuses on offering trained real estate virtual assistants to real estate professionals. In 97, Bob started his professional career not as an investor, but as a pro hockey player. After winning a national championship in 95, he signed a professional contract where he played 8 years, four in the US and four in Europe. Pretty cool. Upon his retirement in 2004, he acquired his first flip and has done over 700 transactions since then. He's also started two very successful real estate coaching programs, three virtual assistant staffing companies, a used appliance company, that sounds interesting, and much more. Bob's a great example of what we call here at Jake and Gino's having a multifaceted business. And in his own words, if a hockey player knucklehead can do it, anybody can. Without further ado, Bob, how you doing, bro?
Very, very good. Very good. First of all, thanks for having me. I am a avid listener to your podcast. There's every single podcast I listen to, there's some incredible takeaways. So thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I mean, that's a huge bio. You retired in 04, huh? How was retirement like in 04 after you stopped playing hockey?
It was tough. The transition, I do have to say, was very, very difficult. But you know, it's something hard work. You could actually accomplish anything in hard work. So I think that's a huge takeaway. I could actually take it a step further if you don't mind me. You don't mind me taking a step further here.
Go ahead.
All right. Cool. There's a number of things that I do want to cover in reference to. Everyone has a story, right? And I think it's important in looking at all of your community as well. Some of the takeaways I could give here is that, you know, one of the things is, I left school early. I didn't graduate. I left two classes early, and I know many of your community are probably saying, what a knucklehead. Why would he leave two classes early, right? But when I signed a professional contract, I had, we call it a point of decision, right? I had a decision to make. It's whether I take a pretty good lump sum. Back in the day, I got offered $110,000 signing bonus, or I had the ability to finish school. So my first decision was, all right, do I take the money or do I finish school? So I decided, obviously, to take the money with the idea that I could always go back to school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fast forward 8 years later, right? My second point of decision was, do I go back to school and have a fallback position? Meaning, if real estate or whatever I want to do doesn't work out, do I have a fallback position? Now, I've always been the type of person where I don't want a fallback position. When I set a goal or I set a path, I want to make sure I'm all in. I want to jump all in, right? It's kind of like a golden retriever, right? Do you have a golden retriever? You guys, for me, I have a golden retriever. And if you have a tennis ball, brand new tennis balls, you open up the top of tennis balls and the smell just comes out, right? The brand new smell. And I have a golden retriever. So as soon as you take out a ball, they are looking at that, right at that ball, and they put blinders on, right? And the equivalent of blinders in our world are naysayers. Right. If you decide, you know, when I decided that I want to jump into real estate, I had family, friends, relatives saying, hey, Bob, you're an idiot. Finish school. Real estate is not the right way to go, so on and so forth. So the good thing with me is I put those blinders on. I set a goal. I door knocked for a year. Right. My first deal I got actually was within a month of jumping into real estate. I got a deal, made $32,000 on that first flip within 2 months, right, as a rehab property. But the takeaway there has to do with setting a goal and following that goal. And, you know, don't listen to naysayers. Don't listen to anybody that is going to tell you you can't do what you want to do. I think that's really, really important. So I did not get my degree because I wanted to make sure, for me, it was a motivating factor and something that I really, really took to heart to say, I don't want a fallback position, right? I don't want something to fall back on, because if I do, it's easier to quit, right?
And I think that's important. A few things come to mind. First of all, I have six kids, so I have blinders on every day. They make me have blinders. So I am completely in the same realm as you. I just don't listen to anybody. You gotta walk to the beat of your own drum, as they say. As far as having a ball fallback position, I don't know if you ever heard the story of Rocky Balboa, you know, Sylvester Stallone. When he did his first movie, he didn't have a fallback. I mean, ruined his relationship with his wife and all. I remember Tony Robbins talking about it. Basically, he was so hungry about that movie. They gave him, he was basically had no electricity. He had to go to the New York, public library to keep the lights on because he was so freaking cold. He couldn't pay his bills, but he had that hunger and he didn't have that fallback position. He said to Tony Robbins, I don't want to get a job, because if I get a job, real job paying the bills and all, I'm going to lose that hunger of, actually becoming successful. And he held out, and it sort of sounds like what you did. He didn't want to have that fallback position. And a lot of us like that comfort. A lot of us don't want that fallback. Say, you know what? It's almost like you're self-sabotaging yourself. I'm just going to go back and get work and stay comfortable and not, put myself out there. So I commend you for that. When did you start all these businesses? You started fixing and flipping homes. So how did you end up with the virtual assistant company? How did that come about?
Yeah, so I met my first mentor back in 2004. I like to say, and I know a lot of times on your podcast, you like to say there's luck involved. But I'm a firm believer that you create your own luck, right? So The first thing I did when I jumped into real estate, I networked really, really every single week. I networked. And I met an individual, Pat Precourt. Josh, you might know him, who was my first mentor. So I got into business with him at the beginning, and he really took me under his wing. He did a lot of speaking. He did a lot of coaching. He did a lot of training. So we became partners after a year in business. So we started a coaching program it revolved around short sales. Through our career, we've done over 700 short sale transactions, which you'll learn a lot when you're in the short sale industry, right? Dealing with a lot of different people. So we started getting a pretty good reputation in reference to that. And then we started another coaching program with some really, really good buddies of ours right now, and ended up morphing into one of the biggest right now today coaching programs out there, which I'm proud to, to say I'm part of as well. But within that time, you realize when you deal with tens of thousands of students, there are some pain points that our students have. And One of those pain points are, and again, I might be off on my stats, right? But I think it was a little over 95% of students that we've seen, both in the coaching program that I ran back when the short sale days to the coaching program that we started in 2007 to now, about 95% of our students either work part-time or full-time, which I'm sure you see as well within your community, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing we would always take a step back in is we always want to over-deliver, and customer service, I think, is imperative in any business that is run, right? So the void in reference to that one is, how do we fill that void to help our students get more time back in their day? So the answer, which we figured out back in 2014, were the virtual assistant world, right? So we set up a whole system and process to where we started a recruiting company in the Philippines. So all of our virtual assistants are out of the Philippines, right? So we started a sourcing and recruiting company in the Philippines and also a training company. We put them through a intensive training program to fit the end user, which is real estate professionals. So we started that back in 2014, tested it for a year to make sure it's something that, the real estate professionals need, all of us real estate professionals need, use them in my own business as well. And then I started another one, sold that one, started another one. So I guess you could say I do enjoy the multifaceted. I know you guys use the multifaceted businesses. Mm-hmm. And I love that statement, because I have a buddy of mine that is in one of my masterminds that owns a supermarket, right? So when you walk through a supermarket, Where do they start you off? Do they start you off where the ketchup is and the canned goods, or where do they start you off?
That's a good question. Where do they start you off? They usually start you off in the produce, don't they?
Bingo. Bingo. They start you off in the produce. And just like my buddy says, the money's made on the perimeter, right? So you look at the middle of a supermarket, that's only about a 2 to 3% margin. You start off in produce, that's over a 30% margin. So you got the meats, the produce, right? Mm-hmm. The cheeses, the deli, the florists, et cetera. So it's the same thing with a lot of our businesses. And I actually mapped this out. It's kind of funny. So for you guys, the same thing, right? You keep adding a lot on the perimeter for your business. And I love it because that's multifaceted, the brokerage, education, property management, and now adding syndication to it. It's phenomenal when you look at business models like that.
Mm-hmm. So that can translate into residential. But let me ask you a couple of questions about the VA. Why did you choose the Philippines?
The main reason, sorry, I just took a sip of my drink there. Main reason is because of the English is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a high level of people finishing college as well.
Yep.
There's a high stake on education. And that's the reason why we picked that. And there's other places you could go to, but I found, I've tested other places, that for me in my business has been the best.
So who uses them? Who are you targeting for your other than real estate professional? Before we get into how they can help real estate, who else is using VAs in their business?
So for us, we break it down both on residential and commercial, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't say this earlier, but I have two commercial units. One is a standalone unit that I have my used appliance company in, mm-hmm. and the other one is a 10-unit retail unit. So mm-hmm. the next step is getting into apartments, which obviously many of this community have. Mm-hmm. But we break it down. So who's specializing, how we break it down is we have wholesalers, rehabbers, buy and hold specialists, and property managers, mm-hmm. right? So the property management side is really, really big because of the pain points that are in property management, right? I know for me with my 10-unit building, if I'm getting landlord calls all the time because there's a backup and a sink, that's a huge pain point for me, right? For many of you in this community, is it okay if I call the community or yeah, do you want me to use a different?
Definitely. No, they're
okay. Cool. Yeah, I start breaking it down, and for the property manager that use our service, you know, they break it down into mainline, maintenance, leasing, lease renewal, collections, etc. So that's just a couple of the categories that many of the property managers use our service. So I'll give you an example of a pain point that that it'll fill. Let's say I have a 100-unit building, and on the fifth floor, someone's taking a tub. Little Johnny's taking a tub, right? And all of a sudden, the plug or the drain starts leaking into the unit down below. Now, I'm getting a call as the landlord, right? If I own the property or a property manager, I'm getting the call. And so the homeowner says, hey, listen, we have a clog. We have a leak in our tub. It's leaking down. Now, what you have to do is you got to call a plumber just for that unit, right? But what happens underneath that? Leak comes in the next bathroom, right? Now you have to call the other tenant. You have to coordinate someone to come into that place. So now you're coordinating two different things, right? And you have to now get not only a plumber on that floor, but you also have the handyman on the next floor, to where now they have to cut a hole in the top of the bathroom where that is. They got to fix the ceiling. Maybe they have to come in with a pop. Maybe it's a popcorn ceiling. They have to spray the popcorn. They have to coordinate it with the homeowner. Not only that, you have to make sure that all of that gets fixed. So now you're dealing with homeowners, you're dealing with owners, and now you're dealing with contractors, right? So for me as a landlord, and I know I experienced that with my 10 unit, but if you have 100 unit, now that's just exponentially greater in how many headaches you have mm-hmm. because of one leak.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, what are the tasks do you provide for, I mean, how else can real estate professionals use these? Where else are they utilized?
So for flippers, you have one set of them. For for property managers, another set. You could look at, obviously, like I said before, the mainline leasing, lease renewals. Like leasing would be creating lease drafts, sending them out. Once they're sent out, another pain point that I find is actually following up to get that paperwork back. Right. Mm-hmm. That is like that's some of that stuff is brain damage work for us, us investors or professionals, right? Posting pictures on Facebook would be an example, right? If you have a, if you have an opening in one of your units, right? You take pictures, you actually post them and keep sending them out. On the lease renewals, you have, you know, you're responsible for checking, coordinating with tenants that are up for renewals, right? I think that's a big pain point and one of the pain points we fill. And on upfront, one of the mainline ones has to do with the customer experience. Like I said before, I'm big on customer experience, and no matter what businesses that I run, I think the experience is extremely important because if a tenant has a great experience with you, they will stay with you, right? Same thing if you own a property management company. If they have a great experience as an owner with you as a property management company, they're not going to go anywhere. So what's under mainline has to do with two things. We hear a lot of complaints in reference to tenants and also owners of complexes on the property management side. When companies have automated systems and they're on hold, right? That's one of the pain points I know for me is when I'm calling into a company and they put me on hold, right? That's just a, you know, for me, it just irritates the heck out of me because of that experience, right? So what we do is we plug virtual assistants in that situation to be able to take calls and route them to the correct department, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that one level of customer experience that really, really helps our property managers that use our VAs.
So what makes your VA company different from, let's say, me wanting to go on and hire somebody on Upwork or somebody on Fiverr?
Yep. You know, you look at different companies, and different companies have different pricing models as well. And one of the things, you look at a company like Fiverr. Fiverr is fantastic at one-off tasks, right? If you want a logo for your business, I would highly recommend going to a Fiverr as an example, right? An Upwork, they have virtual assistants all over the world, right? They don't just focus in on, you know, the Philippines or Russia or wherever they are, India, et cetera, et cetera. They have them all over the world. So they have a buffet, if you will, that you have to, as an individual, as an investor, as a real estate professional, you have to go out to each and every one of those resumes, comb through all of those resumes, read all of them, and decide who the best one is for you, right? So now you have to interview. You know, for me, I look at my time as really, really extremely valuable, right? So for me, having to comb through resumes, hundreds of resumes to pick one VA, it's not the best use of my time. Mm-hmm. So that's a pain point that we fill. We comb through, we have a sourcing and recruiting company that we set up in the Philippines, which we have a team that sends everyone through an assessment process to get to training, and then our training department also. So along those lines, they're also getting, we're sourcing the right VAs that we want, right? We have a 10-point system, and then we send them through a month-long training program. And if they get through that training program, that means that they are ready to go for our clients on the other end. So it's really a weeding out system for over a month, actually, to get the proper VA that fits exactly what you need in your business.
How do you train them? How did you set up a training program for them? What are you looking for in a good VA?
You know, a lot of my background is training, right? You know, helping coaching and all the coaching background. I coach my three kids in hockey as well. I got three young kids. I got a 14-year-old, 11-year-old, and 9-year-old. And a lot of I really feel in life and in business is coaching, right? Mm-hmm. It's coaching and mentoring. I'm a firm believer that, you know, if somebody just jumps into real estate and they try to wing it, you know, you're going to lose a hell of a lot of money, right? And, you know, I think everybody that's probably listening to this podcast has felt that pain. So I'm a firm believer in coaching and mentoring. And I really think that that is what everybody should do, right? So taking that approach to business, if you set up the proper training program for your customer base, right at the beginning, then you will have the best trained, whether it's an employee, whether it's a VA or whatever it is in business, you're going to have a better business in the end if you set that. You know, it's not easy to set up, right? The pain points for setting up a training program to make sure that your VAs or your employees are going to be really, really qualified in the end. It's not easy, right? But I think it's a necessary evil for us to do in business, right? Whether it's a virtual assistant company or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, do you mind jumping into your different programs, different costs it would be to hire you for a company, for VA?
Yep, not at all. So what we typically have is we have a part-time, we have three different things that we do. We have a part-time setup, a full-time setup, and then we have what we call a line of businesses, right? So the part-time setup, it's $10.60 an hour, and then the full-time is $9.60 an hour. All right, and obviously that is a premium, but I'm a firm believer of, you know, if you have the best program out there, there's a reason why it's the best because of all the setup at the beginning. You know, we spoke about, you know, different programs out there and different costs. I always like going back to this, all right? My first house that I bought, I bought a cheap ass Home Depot door, right? And it was a French door in the back of my house. And it was $99 compared to spending $500. Every winter, I swore at that door because, you know, being in the Northeast, you know how much money I lost because my oil bill shot up and I was like, I'm never going to do that again. And that's just a small example of, you know, the takeaways of getting what you pay for.
Right? So you know how you eliminate that problem? You sell the house and come down here to Florida with me. Problem solved. No more heat, no nothing, bro. There's no more oil. You know what I mean? That's how you solve that problem. So I mean, it'll cost a little bit more than $400, but in the long run, you'll be winning. So
yeah, but the taxes, right? We talked about the taxes in Connecticut will kill you anyways.
Listen, I gotta ask you about this. How'd you get into a used appliance company? Where did that come from?
You know, my buddy actually owns a new appliance company. And it's the first way for me to get introduced to commercial real estate, right? So I bought the building. It was attached to that actual, to that used appliance company. And a lot of our clients are probably about 90% of our clients own apartment buildings. So I figured, you know what, this is one step closer to get into apartment buildings. Yes. And I figured I would invest in something that's passive. So passive income for me, whether it's business or real estate, I think it's probably the best thing you could ever get into.
That's actually pretty cool because we do use some used appliances in our buildings. I mean, if you're dealing with a C tenant base and you're dealing with a, you know, in Tennessee, if you're renting a one bedroom for $450 or $500 a month, you don't need the shiny stainless steel. You can go with something that's used, you know, got a couple of years on it. You can save a couple $100. Why not? It's just, it depending on the tenant base. So we use a lot. And I used to have properties up in Rochester. That's what you put in a lot of these C minus properties. There's no reason to put the shiny object. And that's one of the big things that new investors do. They think that you buy a building and you're living in it. So you need to spend $800 on a fridge, or you can go with a used one for $200. And that extra $600 can buy you three more refrigerators or three more units. So that popped out of me like, dude, I got to ask about the used appliance company. That's awesome. That's really cool. That's really cool. Before we get to the short answer questions, I just want to ask one more last question. Since you seem like you've got a lot of different businesses, do you have like a best business tip for the listeners?
A best tip business? I think it's action, right? You got to look at the action that we take. You could sit here and read books all day long. You could take classes. You could get education. You could do all of that. But if you don't take action and implement what you actually learn, I look at it as wasted education, right? You know, I listen to podcasts every day, right? I probably listen to almost every one of your podcasts. And I always look at it as we all look at things within a certain lens, right? So before this podcast, you and I talked, we are looking at things in a certain lens. If we learn one thing from each other, right, we change our lens. And I think if we do that with every interaction, with every book, with every podcast, with every, you know, conversation that we have, we get better and better and better. You know, our comfort zone is here, and then it keeps getting wider and wider and wider. The more we learn, but we have to take action. So to anchor that back to what we learn, we have to put into play, right? I think that's a huge takeaway that a lot of I see with clients and customers and students. It's the action behind things, because if we don't take action, we got nothing. Mm-hmm. Well, let me finish that. Sorry about that. What we do have is a naysayer that's going to be bombarding somebody else. The most educated person is usually not the person that actually takes action and does it. So I think that's, you don't want to become one of those people. So
I agree. So I like that constant improvement, right? Seeking that, but also implementing what you learned, because you can be, like you said, the most educated, but if you don't take action, you're going to get no results, right?
Yep. Agreed.
So, all right, some short answer questions for you. What about, you've been in a lot of different businesses and done a lot. What's your best deal you've done and why?
All right, this is twofold. My best deal is probably my first flip. My first flip was, I was driving around neighborhoods, I was farming areas, and I made an offer. And here's why it was the best deal. It was listed property for $175,000, and I put an offer for $135,000. Now, a lot of people typically are scared to put lowball offers. They call them lowball offers, whether it's apartment or single family, doesn't matter, right? So I put in that low offer and they accept it. And that was my first thought was, oh shit, what do I do now? Right? I didn't have contractors. I didn't have money set up, right? I put money away for my hockey playing days, but I couldn't use it all in this one deal, right? So ended up going out, finding contractors, finding money, put the deal together. So I think it's the action behind that first flip. And the other one was actually my 10 unit deal. It was a property that was an REO. It was listed for $300,000. We put an offer for 180. They ended up settling at $200,000. We put about $60,000 into it. And now it's listed on the market for over $350,000. Right. And we have cash flow every single month. Mm-hmm. So, So I think those two deals are probably the best deals I've done to date.
I like it. It sounds like you got outside your comfort zone and, like you said, took action, right? And that's why you have results and where you are today. What about your worst deal and what was the learning lesson you walked away from with it?
All right, that one's pretty easy for me. That's and you'll respect this, Gino. A knockdown rebuild in Greenwich, Connecticut. Now, I'm in West Hartford, Connecticut. This is probably about, an hour and something away, right down the street of Regis Philbin. That's where he owned his house. Now, talk about out of your area. First of all, I'm not a new construction dude, right? I was just a brand new investor. This is back in 2005. So I've been in the business for a year. So we put down a non-refundable option for $150,000. And again, I didn't know much in the industry. So they hired an attorney. They ended up, fast forward to it. We had to hire an attorney, try to get our money back. And the attorneys over there are not cheap, about $475 an hour. Mm-hmm. So after we're in it for another $10,000, we had to decide to walk on the deal. So $150,000, my wife wanted to kill me. My business partner's wife wanted to kill him. You know how it goes, right? So $75,000 for me, $75,000 for him. But the learning lesson there was, first of all, you got to get educated. I knew nothing about knockdown rebuilds. It wasn't even in my area. That's a whole different world out there. So getting educated, getting mentors. I didn't have a specific mentor in that area that could actually educate me on how things work outside my comfort zone and outside my area. So I think those two things, but I could also say it was the worst deal, but the best thing that's ever happened as well, right? Knowing to stay in your lane and then get educated before you jump into another lane, right? Hope investing doesn't get you anywhere. Hope investing loses you $150,000.
So let me ask you, what was the shiny object syndrome? Why were you attracted to that deal?
It was shiny object through the roof. Mm-hmm. We got sold in, and I think I recall you saying this on one of your podcasts by saying, you know what? There's always deals out there. If you get sold in the shiny object, don't bite, don't buy, because that's all it is. There's going to be deals that are coming. You know, there's going to be a better deal later. But if someone needs your money now, it's probably not a good deal.
See, I want everyone to listen to what I'm about to say right now. And this might be controversial or not. But to me, fixing and flipping and buying single family homes is not investing. That is actually speculating. That's like buying Apple stock at 200, unless it's got a dividend where you know the divvy's secure and it's going to get it. You're hoping for it to go to 220. So when you're buying new land, you're buying builds to sell, that really is not investing because there's no cash flow there, right? You're putting money out. You're hoping that you're riding the wave of the market. Once the market changes and turns, like the stock market as we're speaking right now, is probably going to be down multiple triple digits. If you don't have stop losses in there, that to me is not investing. That to me is speculating, and people really need to learn their vocabulary in investing. There's nothing wrong with that strategy. I am not saying anything wrong, but it is ordinary gain, right? It's not capped. It's taxed at a higher rate. So you keep less of your money. You have more of your money out there for a longer period of time, because if it's going to cost you $3 million to rehab that house, it's really going to cost you $3.2 million. Carry costs, closing costs, paying the realtor, hoping to make $1 million on that house, which is a great pay, but you're only going to keep how much of that money? You have to split it between two of you. You hope you can sell it. The rainbow's done. And then once you're done with that, you've got to go look for the next one. So it's really a job. So there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but just make sure you're clear on what you're trying to accomplish. And maybe, Bob, at that time, like you said, hey, you got Regis building down the street. You're in Greenwich, Connecticut. Greenwich is a beautiful city. It's amazing. I love Greenwich. You can get attracted in there. I mean, what is the average home, like $1 million? It's beautiful. Yeah. It's a beautiful place to live, right? I mean, you see the cars and you get enchanted by it. But for somebody who's trying to invest money and trying to stay long-term and trying to generate cash flow, that might not have been the deal for you, right?
Right. Right. Let me add to that. I love the model where you marry both of them together. Mm-hmm. So for what you offer here, it's fantastic because you have the cash flow, right? That you could, if you do a flip, you could take that money and dump that into the assets that you have. Like I love marrying the two, mm-hmm. but you definitely need that cash flow, right? It's whether it's the multifamily cash flow attached to business or taking that flip money and dumping into, you know, I know you're adding in syndications, right? You're adding in that. That's incredible on exactly what I believe in.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's like building a business. Real estate, really, people don't look at real estate as a business, unfortunately. They look at it as just an investment, just as being passive. And I think if you can start shifting your mindset from buying a 25 unit building to actually, that's a little revenue generator right there. If I can really deliver customer service and I can really work on the net operating income, that can be its own little, you know, little gold mine. Hopefully I can pull some money out. And if I don't, I'll just continue to buy it. And you know what? If it does really well, maybe I'll sell it and trade it up for something bigger and keep going bigger. But in the end, it really is a business. That's why the guys who are really successful at fixing and flipping, that's really not investing them. They're building an amazing business with amazing business systems in it. They've got other people doing the work for them and they're just growing their business. They're growing a brand. And that's the guys who are really successful. Not the ones who are doing one or two houses, you know, every couple months, having their money out there, looking at the whim, doing everything, saving on paint and plumbing because they want to do it themselves. That ultimately is going to get you burned out and you're going to get caught up in the cycle. So I think people should just distinguish between the two.
And I love the podcast you did with Ree Schmidt. That was an incredible podcast because it was funny, before her husband quit her job, she said, all right, well, we want $25,000 passive. And she never told him she was at $35,000. But the takeaway there, the one thing that I took away, and that's a firm belief that I have, is that, you know, when we're analyzing, you know, whether we should jump into apartment buildings or not, I think we have to start looking at first, how much money do we need coming in per month? Right? Mm-hmm. Cash flow wise. Mm-hmm. Right. So then now if you're flipping, you could take that money and invest in apartments to where now, because like you said, flipping is you're working your ass off, right? You're turning and burning. If you don't take a portion of that money and add in a component of passive income, you know, you're going to be 90 years old doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's just a fact of the matter. It's you're working your ass off every single day, and that's okay. You know, I love working. You guys love working, right? But there's also a time where we have to take that money and dump them into apartment buildings, passive income, things like that. Mm-hmm. So then now we don't have a gun to our head every friggin' day, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to work. Mm-hmm. So
I agree.
I love what you said.
I like that, right? We want money working for us rather than transactional active incomes. And we're always searching for the next deal.
Yep.
Bob, you're clearly a guy who values education and I'm sure you've read a lot of books. What is your favorite book and why?
Actually, you know, my favorite book is Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. Compound Effect, I think I read it back in 2013. And it has to do with everything. I mean, obviously, apartment complexes, that's compound effect. Money compound on top of each other. And that's the reason why I started the virtual assistant company, right? I like working in businesses that money compounds on each other, right? You get a new customer, you help them be successful. They stay, right? You had another one, they stay. You had another one, they stay. It's the same thing. It's the equivalent of you know, starting with 10 units and then getting to 20, getting to 30, getting to 40, getting to 1,000 units like you guys, right? I think it's the same concept. So that book is great. I also have, you know, a number of books. I got Obstacles the Way, because we all deal with obstacles, right? Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of different things. I'm reading Dichotomy of Leadership right now by Jocko Willink and Leif. I don't know if it's Leif or Leif Babin, but I'm huge on all of that. And it's the action, like I said before, it's the action behind it. So I'd have to stick with Compound Effect for me.
Nice. I like it. So like you, I'm a big believer that success leaves clues, right? Study those who are successful. What's one habit you would correlate with your high level of success or your best habit to teach the listeners?
You know what? I would say for me, it's being optimistic, right? You know, my buddies call me Sunny in 72 because everything that I look at is always sunny and it's 72. Kind of like Eugenio down in Florida, right?
Yeah, but you're sunny in 42 today, aren't you? I'm sunny in 72 down here. So.
I think it's important, though, to be optimistic, right? We have too many, you know, you look at the news, everything is so pessimistic out there. You have family, friends, relatives, you know, a lot of people are just pessimistic. And if we could wake up every day and be optimistic and see the best in people, see the best in business, I think you're going to go a long, long way in any type of business that you have.
I agree.
I like it. So Gino, you want to give the listeners a recap of what we learned today?
I want to get into used appliances. That's the first thing. That seems like another multiple stream of income. I'm looking at my notes here. That is really cool. I am going to mention that to Jay because Jay probably never thought about it. I like that. I think the virtual assistants is just a low barrier of entry for people to start scaling up. Maybe they don't have everybody, but maybe they can use a couple of VAs on their team. I like the business model. I like the pro hockey, from going to pro hockey, not finishing. You can always go back and finish college. You know, you don't need to get that piece of paper to say that you're, you know, you're qualified. I think that a lot of us are lured into that. And I got my buddy right next to me. He went to college. He was going to become a doctor. Didn't turn out that way. That's fine. He, you know, went on and did his thing, and he's really successful now. So I don't think you need college. Do you have any takeaways, Josh?
Yeah. So a few of them here. I think we talked about cost versus value. You know, if you're looking for the lowest price, are you always getting the best value or return? And what we learned with Bob here is being able to systemize it and create a quality outcome that's more predictable. A lot of times has more implications as far as in your business, you're going to get a greater return from that. And then also it's building your business with systems, just like Bob has systems in his business. It's what's allowed him to have that predictable outcome. We use systems in our business, so we don't have what Jay calls the I'm a mentality. So those are some common themes of successful people. Bob, any last tips for the listeners?
Well, and one of the other things, and this is one thing I didn't touch upon, especially for apartment units. One of the ways that you could use on the acquisition side virtual assistants is, you know, looking at tired landlords. And this is, Gino, maybe something that you guys could add in on the outbound dialing, right? You get a list of tired landlords, you skip trace them, you outbound dial them. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way for the acquisitions because, you know, on the acquisition side, it does get tiring after a while, right? You know, you got different types of marketing strategies, but that's a good way to call direct, engage seller motivation, right? And you don't have to do that yourself. It's just a small little tip I actually wrote down here and I forgot to say while we were talking, but yeah, that's one thing I did want to add. And I do want to thank each and every, you know, each of you for taking your time, you know, to do this podcast and all of your listeners. It's been a pleasure for me.
Before we let you go, where can the listeners find you?
They can find me. You go to Reva Global, REVAGlobal.com. You could also find me on Facebook. If you want to email me direct, it's Bob@REVAGlobal.com. You can reach me anytime you have any questions at all.
Sounds great, Bob. Thanks a lot for taking the time out yourself today. Anybody needs a virtual assistant, you know where to go. Josh, thanks for being on the show with me today, filling in for my boy. Jake, everyone have a great day and start thinking about scaling your business using virtual assistants. I like it. Take care, Bob.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate
thanks.
It. Bye.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.